Welcome, everyone, to Unscripted Equity Curiosity. This is Season 2, Episode 12. With me today is Andrew Friedman, the Sector Head for Hedgeye Communications at Hedgeye, and I am Ami Joseph, Sector Head for Technology. We are absent of Felix today, but we'll get him back next time. And we are taping this on a day when the NASDAQ is down 4%, and tomorrow it'll probably be up 4% and down 4% the next day. Pretty wild swings. And it reminds me of the second half of 2008 or late in 2008. Technically, this reminds me of 2001. This kind of like, yeah. You know, this isn't a debt crisis. It's a multiples crisis. It definitely augurs a slower business conditions in technology for a while and TMT and broadly. Tech led the rally up after a very, very long, healthy growth period. I'm taking context from one period and I'm applying it to another period. So it's, I think, one of these things where, so we're going to dance around this a little bit. But in November of 2008, and I've said this on this show before, in November 2008, I was working at Fidelity, and Fidelity got together, you know, all the portfolio managers and all the analysts. Market was going down like 2-3% a day. It was crazy. And for a long time. And they put everybody in a room and they put the four horsemen of Fidelity up on the podium, and they had, which was, you know, kind of like the four best portfolio managers ever at Fidelity. And the three of them spoke first, and there was a varying degree of like conservatism and then like some cautious optimism about buying and some outright negativism and sort of like, you know, kind of being discussed back and forth. And Peter Lynch was quiet the entire time. And then Peter spoke, and Peter got up, and I think I've mentioned this here before, but Peter got up and said, if you, meaning pointed to us in the audience, if you can't find a 10 or 100 bagger right now, you shouldn't be in this business. And there was like a hush in the audience because everyone was like looking at their portfolios and their on their mobile phones, and the stuff was falling by second, every second to second value was being destroyed. Our careers were being damaged, whatever it was. And he said, it was just literally almost like he had like said something politically incorrect or something. Yeah. It was like literally like a hush across the room. And I think it was like a slap in the face. Peter Lynch bitch slapped all of us. Said, wake up. And then he said, look, I don't know if the market's going to bottom today or tomorrow. I don't know when it's going to bottom, he said. So I don't have a magic rabbit in my hat, you know, that you guys are all waiting for me to give that answer. He's like, but I'll tell you what I am buying. He said, I'm buying 99% debt to equity levered companies, which is literally what everybody had already sold, shorted.
Yeah.
Were the ones
was still short.
They were on their way to being like penny stocks.
Yep.
You know, like, and he's like, that's what I'm buying. If they, I'm buying as many of those as I can, because if they survive this, they're going to be, you know, 1,000 baggers or whatever. And so that's why he, in the context of him saying, if you can't find a 10 or 100 bagger in this climate. So Andrew, I guess now 2001, it's different than 2008, right? Debt crisis.
It's always different, right?
Yeah. So, it's always different. Debt crisis, wall of money. From, you know, helicopter money solves the debt crisis. Inflation solves the debt crisis. We're in a different situation now. In my sector, for example, we've had innovation probably arguably overfunded for about a decade with increasing amounts. So 10 years ago, it wasn't that funded, but started to be and then increased significantly across that period, which is going to have consequence on multiples. It's going to have consequence on growth rates and competitive landscapes and deflation and function and things like that. Clients are willing, saturation, a faster path. So it'll take a long time. Like it'll take a long time for enterprise software, for example, to reaccelerate because it's going to be saturated for a while, both because of how much has been spent and bought, and also because of like the actual budgets of the clients, which are going to go sideways or down. So I think there's going to be like a hard period of 3 or 4 years where it's going to be hard to work that out. So I guess with that in mind, Andrew, like that intro in mind, if you had to go hunting for a 10 to 100 bagger in your space today, where would you look? What's the first name that pops into your head?
Yeah, I mean, it's I think I maybe given this answer to you before, but Roku. I mean, it's I think, I mean, look, I haven't gone super deep on a lot of companies as I have on Roku, right? So I just want to be very clear about that. Like, I've spent an absurd amount of time researching this company. And frankly, I don't think I'd be able to spend as much time on every single ticker in my coverage. Maybe by the time, like, I'm like 80, you know, 80, 90 years old, decrepit. But you know, maybe still doing this job, hopefully not, but you know, the point is, you know, that it's just that drives a lot of the conviction that I have, you know, it's the fact that I know it very well. But when I think about the market opportunity in front of them, what they're building, there is a huge potential for this company to be a 10 bagger, right, coming out of this. Now, is there a tremendous amount of risk and uncertainty? Is there a lot of competition? Of course, there always is. Do they have to execute? Yes. Is there anything structural that I have come across that makes me think that, hey, like, it's a nice story, but it's probably not going to happen because of these structural reasons? No. All the reasons why that it couldn't happen are reasons related to just competition and market forces, which we've seen historically, you know, many companies deal and with and navigate that effectively. You know, you could have said the same thing about Amazon, any of the big tech Goliaths or very successful companies that have reached maturity. When they're smaller, they always have to defy incumbents, defy the competition, prove their worth, you know, and that doesn't happen overnight, right? So but that being said, like, it's just the path is there for them, and I see it. And you know, I know that the market's down and it doesn't meet any of the style factor components for the type of tape that we're in. But quite honestly, it's one where if I could own it, I would, you know, be comfortable having it as a very large position of my portfolio and wanting to ride that for like a 10-year look. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of how I think about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt. I'll give you two examples. One that someone else thinks is going to be like a 100 bagger in my space, and one that I think. So Cathie Wood has like an insane price target on Zoom. And you remember that, like, and I don't want to like poop on Cathie, because, like, you know, I actually respect her. She's built an incredible business. Like, I mean, look, there's a lot of zeros in her bank account that hopefully one day you and I will get to, but you know, we gotta take more risk if we're ever gonna get there. But so Cathie's got like a crazy insane price target on Zoom. And for those listening, you know, and Andrew knows this, like, we got long Zoom in the pandemic in May of 2020. It had already doubled, it had gone from 80 to 160. It was expensive at 80, it went to 160. And we went long because we had a data set, we had a whatever, et cetera, large market, large opportunity, many, many positives, a great innovation curve, better than any other tool, et cetera. But if we fast forward to today, and like, this is, I'm almost trying to like use Zoom as an example of how not to pick 100-bagger. You know, Zoom kind of went to sleep on innovation curve. But they like almost tripled their workforce. So they went to sleep on the innovation curve. They allowed Microsoft and Google, not easy competitors, to eat up all the white space around their product, all the opportunity for their core product to grow in customer size is now that it landed basically by Google and Microsoft. So if they, with equal product or as good product, and because they haven't innovated, even crappier tools like Slack's own voice and video dialing from within Slack is almost as good as Zoom at this point in terms of basic features and functions and stability. And so they really, like, the market really kind of like isn't there anymore for them to go and conquer unless they find a way to leapfrog everybody and delineate new functionality that everyone needs. And then maybe, but as of today, no. So that's number one. Number two is Zoom had an opportunity at one point to dominate so much of our work lives. Like, I'm not a product manager in technology, but I obviously study the space really carefully. And like, they had a chance, Andrew, to, like, for example, we're on a Zoom call right now. What if, like, you could click a tab and it shows you every Zoom call you and I have been on, the date of the call. And if you sub click under, it shows the messages that we've had, the chat that we've passed between us during those calls. It shows, it can, another sub thing, it shows you every slide I've shown you on these calls before. It has transcripted, auto transcripted and highlighted topics and, you know, kind of like key summary type of things. And then it has sharing, like, do you want to share a model with Andrew or whatever file with Andrew around this? It could have been a platform that everyone lives in all day long, as opposed to like what it's become, which is just kind of like a simple video call that you can get done with your teammates or with your clients. And so they've really given up the landscape. They've gone back to the innovation curve, but they're recently, which is great, but they're putting their eggs in the CCaaS basket, which is to compete with Five9 and Genesys and et cetera. And I'm not saying that that space is a bad space. There's a lot of dollars available there, but it's a slow growing space. Five9 is a leader in that category and they haven't innovated in like a decade and they're still there. Like, nobody's disrupting them. Twilio and Amazon have disruptive technology products in space and they're winning, but it's like slow. So now Zoom is going all in on a space that is going to take a long time to build out equivalent functionality. And even then a long time to win real dollars on. And the product that I thought was going to save the day, which was Zoom Phone, is now 3 million phone units. Maybe like the pace of additions is something like 1 million a year now, but like it needs to get to like 25 million.
Is that what enterprise, that's like 8x8? Like eight, yes. And those companies.
Yes, except Zoom is like lighter, better, easier to use, faster to adopt, all this kind of stuff. And like, you know, but Microsoft is going into this market now. RingCentral is there and still ahead of Zoom. And if it's going to take, it's going to take crossing that 10 million mark to really impact the P&L for Zoom. And like, you're at three, adding one a year. Like that, you're not going to get there, right? You need to be adding one a year, adding three a year, adding five a year. You know what I'm saying? Like that's kind of, and they're not. So if there's a company that I don't think as of today could be a 10 bagger, for sure can't be a 10 bagger, that's that one. So it's kind of like a how not to find a 10 bagger, in my view. In my view, it would be something more like a younger company that's right in the front of its opportunity, where the opportunity is totally untapped, that where the stock is just getting sold down because it got expensive on near-term results or whatever it is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and probably still has more downside to go. I mean, literally, it's no-brainer to say that, with the stock down 7%. I'm looking at HashiCorp right now, which is a $4.8 billion company. Sure, there's risk it goes to $3 billion company, but I think the upside opportunity is if they execute, it's north of a $100 billion company and maybe north of a $300 billion company. This is the next VMware, and it's the next VMware with a better innovation forward path. And just
for my own, because what does VMware do? I'm not familiar.
VMware enabled the separation of hardware and software in computation, which really ushered in the era of the cloud. They built this thing called a hypervisor, which means you can run a logical instance of a server and it is uncorrelated or disconnected from wherever your physical server is running and how many physical servers are running and what physical server it's running on, which that enables the infrastructure as a service era to take over and enables the era of the cloud. And so it's an infrastructure software company that came around in a key moment and really unlocked major next era of growth. And in the case of Hashi, it's you could either say infrastructure as code or it's DevOps, but it's you create your virtual compute with Hashi's Terraform, and then you set up everything with their tools. You set up everything in that instance, from whether it's, you know, the routing that you require for it, the security elements, which are really tight, the integration and publishing from your Git out, publishing the code and the application, running the application, testing and monitoring and security, and a number of other features in terms of network, is like really good networking features. And so there's like, essentially you're going to run and program all your applications through Hashi. And Hashi's like 1% penetrated in terms of monetization. So it's like really, really young and early, and it got expensive on a short-term basis, sure, but that's getting washed out totally. And I think on the other side of this is going to be close to 100 bagger. I don't know. It'd be, let's say, north of a 30 bagger for sure. So that's kind of like my thought process for finding the next 100 bagger, like as of today. But another way to think about this, Andrew, is like, would be like, if you think about a theme that is still like ahead of us, like we haven't really started to have that waterfall into like your space. Like, what theme do you see ahead that is still ahead and hasn't really started to like waterfall in?
Yeah. It's a great question. I think the most, so let's think about this in terms of adoption, right? Like the adoption curve. And let's think about it in terms of like proof of concept and probabilities. If I think about kind of, and the hype cycle. So if I think about the adoption curve and where we're probably maybe in the second inning, right? It's called the second inning of the opportunity. Where 2 years ago, we were probably, or 3 years ago before COVID, we were like, you know, just warming up, right? Let's use baseball game analogy too. Why not? That was like CTV and OTT, right? And that's kind of the concept that advertising and streaming is actually going to work, and that there's going to be fragmentation that's going to occur. And so that's kind of where like Roku fits in. That's also kind of where Trade Desk fits in. But basically that ecosystem cracking open. Of course, you need engagement to drive it, you need a product to drive it. But that was kind of like a lot of skepticism. Everyone was still very high on Netflix and that they were going to be the future of TV, the bundle. There's a lot of false narratives, false prophets, you know, saying all those types of things. So that's kind of the second inning. I think what's actually like still warming up, like very much so, and kind of like went through the typical hype cycle and crashed, is the whole metaverse concept. And so I think that's actually going to be very real. Is it going to be like Ready Player One status in 5 years? Probably not. 10 years, probably not. 30 years, who knows? I really don't know exactly how it's going to shape out. I mean, the fact is that it is so early on that it's really hard, and the technology isn't there. The hardware capabilities aren't there. There's no killer app. There's so many things that just haven't happened yet. But there's a lot of capital going towards building with a lot of smart people trying to figure it out. And I actually do think that there is like a product market fit at the end of the day. Now, whether or not that, you know, cannibalizes something like social media or other form of engagement trends, right? That's going to be another conversation to have. But in terms of like, we just think about the metaverse itself, engagement and being there being a product there, I think that there's something to be had here. and that's something that we've like got flamed out last year, right? Like, I mean, Classic got hit peak hype in 2021 along with everything bubbly, and that's come crashing back down to reality. But again, it's like, we're still warming up there. We're not even starting to play the baseball game, in my opinion. But there's a lot of potential there, and it's not just, the reason why I think there's potential there is really simply because of media and you just mentioned white space, right? I think white space is like a really interesting concept. And in media, white space is, you know, basically foregone monetization of your content, right? Like where you're missing holes in terms of engagement. And so the most obvious form of white space where the metaverse and technologies like virtual reality can actually take off is in the media world where, you know, sports, concerts, the most obvious forms are going to be, you know, helping out of home entertainment companies, you know, better monetize the experience inside the home, right? And growing their audience. So if you could put on a Oculus headset and have it be like with haptics and have it be a fantastic user experience, like such a good user experience, and it allows you to actually be live and watch the World Series right from behind home plate. That's an experience that probably, like, I don't know, the vast majority of individuals in their lifetime will never be able to achieve, right? It's just going to be either way too expensive. They're not going to have the time or the resources. However, if you can, you know, do something like that, with virtual reality, and instead of paying, I'm making up a number, $10,000 for those tickets, right? Because that prices most people out. You can pay $100, right? There's a lot more people that are going to be able to do that. And then it opens up an experience that someone wouldn't be able to have otherwise. And so just because of that, I think it's a very large opportunity that makes the business case exist, that makes it worth investing in technology. And it can be implied not just to media, but all other forums out there. So that's something I'm very excited about, but it's really an engineering problem. It's a hardware problem. And as you know, Ami, like if you go back and look at innovation cycles in tech, whether it's smartphones or what have you, like usually like the future is based off of a specific use case and the hardware just hasn't gotten there yet. But then you go through periods of innovation and capital and investment, and eventually you get there, right? Like, so VR right now is a terrible experience. Like 2 years ago, it was like glitchy. You put on a headset. I tried playing a video game on PS4 with it. Like it cost like $400. I didn't buy it. I was at the store, but then I felt nauseous, right? It's glitchy. It's pixelated to some extent. Like it very reminiscent of like, you know, the early smartphones, right? Or like the early color phones, right? When you first got your color phone, they implemented that. The first LG, that was like a huge thing. Oh my God, my phone's color. So, you know, I think over time it will continue to get better like everything else. And then eventually it will take off and it will be something that I think majority of people in their households will have some type of VR headset, because it's going to, you know, be something that it's going to be affordable. It's going to scale and there's going to be a lot of great content made available for that, which is actually like in theory, very negative for TV consumption, is probably another way to look at that, at a very high level, but, anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So on the metaverse thing, you got me thinking, because from an enterprise perspective, if it was fully developed, it would be a much better way to speed up transaction. It's basically would replace the internet, in my view, replace the web, because you can go and sort of quote unquote meet or learn about other products and companies via this, you know, two-dimensional web, and you can request, you know, introductions via your message, whether it's email or LinkedIn messaging or whatever it is, to try to like break into that and begin the transaction period. But if you were in a three-dimensional universe and you could trial a product and have immediate like transaction abilities and yeah, there's like a lot of, it would speed up commerce.
It would. I mean, like, so then the big question in my mind, and I know we're kind of, I mean, this is unscripted, right? So we just kind of go off on,
yeah,
start with one topic and kind of run with it. And for anyone listening, like Ami and I always have these conversations, but you know, not a lot of time in the day these days. So this is actually like a public, like recorded thing that we do normally. But I get a lot of value out of it. Look, the big question in my mind is the metaverse going to be centralized or decentralized?
Like, meaning like, hosting the resource on my laptop?
Yeah. Like, is it going to be, a walled garden, or is it truly going to be an open network and a decentralized network? And, I think for the metaverse, so like, and then we're talking like the web 2.0 versus like the web 3.0 concept, right? So like, the way that the world's structured today, for the most part, is walled gardens. You have Facebook, Apple controls their ecosystem, Google controls their ecosystem. There's the open web, but it's fragmented and the economics are not that great. And so you have Facebook that's trying to build the metaverse and circumvent the issues that they have with Apple, right? Because they don't have their own hardware platform, which has a lot of risks to it. Potentially existential risks if you're Mark Zuckerberg, against Apple. And Apple is rumored and been rumored to be launching an some type of VR headset. But you know, Apple, they're not ones to release a product really until they've kind of figured it out. And that's, you know, maybe it comes next year, maybe it comes the year after, who really knows, but it's widely expected to be like the next big the first big new hardware release since Steve Jobs passed away, right? Like that's kind of what's being anticipated. And you have to build developer networks, right, in order to support the app developments, to support the ecosystems, and you have to create an incentive model for app developers to get paid, right? Otherwise, it just doesn't work. And that's what we've seen with like the app store models with like Apple and Google. And iOS is a very, you know, kind of a closed system. Android's not, but it's still widely dominated by Google, right? So it's not really a truly open platform. So anyway, in my mind is it going to be decentralized in that, you know, these companies are not going to, that there's truly going to be like an open developer network, kind of purely open source, where there's going to be the economic incentives in place. I don't know whether that's through some type of form of cryptocurrency or some type of blockchain technology. And then, you know, basically Facebook and Apple, maybe their role in this whole thing is going to be primarily on the hardware side, right? Where like you want the best VR headset, right? You want the Ferrari, you want all the haptics, you want the best experience and all the add-ons, then yeah, you're going to need Apple, right? Like that's, you might want to go with that. Or maybe Facebook wins today with Oculus. But either way, when you put on that headset, you're tapping into the same ecosystem. It's not iOS or Android. It's not Facebook or, you know, Instagram or whatever, or another platform or Google. It is truly a one-to-many decentralized ecosystem platform, Web3 type situation. And, you know, in that case, like, you have to think about, like, how would, like, an Apple or Facebook monetize? And that's a train of thought that I haven't really necessarily gone down and answered with, right? Because right now, Facebook's trying to do this because they feel like if they build it, then it gives them a ton of ad inventory and control of data that they can monetize. And they could probably still do that in a decentralized format. But that is like, that to me is like the holy grail, right? That is like what, if you're like, in theory, like the most sustainable building. If you have siloed, fragmented walled gardens of metaverses, a Roblox metaverse, you know, a Facebook Horizon World, an Apple iOS metaverse, like that's not scalable. You can't really achieve synergy. You can't interact with people. Like it really needs to not be a closed system. Otherwise, like it's going to be limited. And then also like it gives, again, way too much control to whoever who builds it. So that's really, in my mind, is like the centralization, decentralization debate of how this thing ultimately shakes out. Because I do think that there's a use case for it, whether or not it, when it gets to scale, who knows, but that's my take.
I think some companies gonna have to be incentivized to, you know, like build some kind of, you know, central hub. But yeah, this is going to the beginning of the metaverse is going to fuel as soon as people start to make money on it, which I seems like it'll probably start with gaming, just logically. That will, and then porn, probably gaming and porn will probably be the first places that.
That's right. I mean, it's already there. I mean, gaming's there. Like you go look at Roblox, right?
Like I'm saying
Horizon,
you know,
World is it's already. Like, I mean, that's where it is. Like the gamification.
Yeah, it's going there. But like people still go play 2K on their, like, you know, whatever, on their Xbox, and they're not playing it in VR type of thing. There's still the bulk of gaming's happening outside of it. But as it transitions and other forms of monetization are there, it will drive hardware spending and hardware innovation. It'll drive like DRAM going up, like instead of having 8 gigs on your computer, you'll have 80 gigs and you'll have your phone, and same thing, and like the pixelation, and it'll drive the entire ecosystem because you really do need a massive hardware upgrade across the board to support this kind of like scale bits and bytes that are interfacing constantly. So that's kind of an interesting one. Fiber, like just like it's a whole thing. Yeah, I think that's a big theme. I would say that isn't really, it's like here in some like minuscule way, right? Because you could still call what's here today VR, not metaverse. It's sort of like the very, very early days. I had another one, but I think we'll stop there for Unscripted episode 12 of season 2, and we'll hold the rest of the discussion for another time. For those listening, we appreciate you, and thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
This presentation is informational only. None of the information contained herein constitutes an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor does it constitute investment recommendation or legal, tax, accounting, or investment advice by Hedgeye or any of its employees, officers, agents, or guests. This information is presented without regard for individual investment preferences or risk parameters and is general, non-tailored, non-specific information. This content is based on information from sources believed to be reliable. Hedgeye is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information. The opinions and conclusions contained in this report are those of the individual expressing those opinions and conclusions and are intended solely for the use of Hedgeye subscribers and the authorized recipients of the content. All investments entail a certain degree of risk, and financial instrument prices can fluctuate based on several factors, including those not considered in the preparation of the content. Consult your financial professional before investing. The information contained herein is protected by United States and foreign copyright laws and is intended solely for the use of its authorized recipient. Access must be provided directly by Hedgeye. Redistribution or republication is strictly prohibited. For more detail, please refer to the terms of service at hedgeye.com/terms of service.